This is the WBBM Air Theater, Wrigley Building, Chicago.
Wrigley's Spearmint Gum presents The Howard Miller Show. And now here with Music on Records is Howard Miller.
Thank you very much, Eddie Joyce. Good morning, everyone, from clear, sun-kissed Chicago. This will make your hearts envious, I think, if you're from any other place where there might be a little bit of smog or fog or soot or dust. We got a real clear and wonderful day in the Middle West, and I hope wherever you are, it's equally as nice. We're going to deviate again from our custom of playing two records and conducting an interview, because today in our studios of CBS in Chicago, we have a very delightful gentleman who has been a good friend of ours for the past couple of years since he came to these shores from England. And because he's always been such a most persuasive individual when it came to being provocative and interesting, that we think it is far more apropos that today we play one less record and have a little bit more of Mr. Alan Dean from London, England. However, before we present Al in interview, I want to suggest to you once again that when you go to your grocery store today or your drug counter, wherever it is that you do the grocery shopping or the food buying, that you remember to pick up a box of Wrigley Spearmint chewing gum for a couple of reasons. First of all, because there's nothing quite so good as Wrigley Spearmint. And secondly, because Halloween comes closer every day. That means, of course, the youngsters coming around for tricks and treats, and there isn't a nicer treat than you can give them than Wrigley Spearmint, the most refreshing and wholesome gum under the sun. So remember to get some, will you, and get it by the box. Wrigley Spearmint chewing gum, wholesome, refreshing, and delicious. Well, Alan, it's wonderful having you back in the city of Chicago. I think the last time I saw you, we were working a television show together about a year ago?
Just about a year ago.
Oh, 14 months ago, something like that. Since then, your travels have taken you, I presume, all over the 48 in this country.
Pretty close to that, yes.
Is home still down in Florida?
Yes, yes, we're still soaking up the sunshine down there.
That's a wonderful spot, isn't it?
Yeah, really.
Alan, before we actually start asking you some of these interesting questions about music and getting your interesting answers, I first of all want to establish the fact that you are now, or are you not yet, an American citizen?
No, not yet. You have to be in the country 5 years, and I have about a little over a year to go before I can apply.
The reason I wanted to say it is because I think it is great testimony to your loyalty and sincerity as a British subject who has come to this country to make a career for yourself. You have thought enough of this country that you have wanted to become one of us to the extent of being an American citizen, for which congratulate you.
Yes.
Alan, what was it that possessed you to switch from your loyalty to England, which I know you'll always have, but to become a citizen here in this country?
Well, I feel that anybody that's in a country that provides them with a good living and a good life and educates their children, I think they owe it to that country to become a citizen.
You know? When was it you first came to America?
Well, I came here in 51, just at the end of 51. Incidentally, I came here intending to just look around for a couple of months. I even had contracts in vaudeville to go back to in England. But, I was very lucky. I met people who introduced me to other people and other people, and I wound up with a date in Washington, D.C., which was quite successful. And from there, I was signed up by Generalitas Corporation, the agency, and they've kept me busy ever since.
You mean you've never gone back, David?
No, I never did. My dad's still got the candle in the window.
And you're still living out of the suitcase with one blue serge suit that's now getting shiny in the back, huh? Well, Alan, of course, since then you moved your family over to this country.
Yes.
And now they're legal residents down in the state of Florida.
Mm-hmm.
And they stay there while you travel around the country doing theaters and vaudeville and the circuit of nightclubs and so forth. Now, of course, you're also recording for MGM and have done some wonderful things for that label. But let's, first of all, talk about the homeland. When you first came to this country, Alan, what was your impression of our great land?
Well, I went to New York when I first came over, and it was a little scary, to tell you the truth. I mean, I've been in big cities before, Paris and Rome and London, but New York and most American cities, Chicago too, and Philadelphia, they have a pace that is quite different to anything else I've ever seen. And you feel quite small and insignificant when you come in and see everybody rushing around like mad. And of course, another thing that strikes every European is the size of the cars, you know.
You mean large as compared to the European small cars?
Everything looks like monstrous. You're scared across the street, you know. Mm-hmm.
Well, there's some value to those small cars. I heard the other day that they're building them so small over in England that if you flood your carburetor, you just pick them up, put them over your shoulder, and burp them. So there might be some value to them. Well, now, Alan, this country, of course, offers, I suppose, greater possibilities, greater potential, doesn't it, for a performer like yourself than Europe, both from the financial point of view and the number of bookings that are available?
I would say so. The main difference is that here your competition is fiercer, And it's a tougher battle, but the prizes are that much greater, so that it's worth the battle. When you do make it here, you can make an absolute fortune over a period of 5 or 6 years, which you could never do in England. You can become a star, but your money doesn't leap up to that amount, you know, that fantastic amount like
yes.
you might here, you know.
Alan, because of the great friendship that this nation, and should have, does have for your British Empire, I think that you'll not mind if for a few moments at least, because I know it'll be interesting to get an Englishman's slant of the news of what's happening across the big pond these days. You won't mind if I talk a little bit about Princess Meg, the royal princess?
No, not at all.
And her captain, Captain Townsend. What is your impression as an Englishman once removed to American soil about the tumult that's going on over there in the press, the British press, as it is here?
Well, I feel that the thing is pretty much over-exaggerated. I believe that whatever comes about should be done discreetly, and if they want to get married, let them get married, or if they don't want to, or if you know, whatever the story is, let it be done in a peaceable manner, and let's not have all this hullabaloo. I believe that the press on both sides of the Atlantic have sort of played this thing up for all it's worth, and they've made it far bigger than it really is, you know.
Yes. Here in this country, of course, our press takes tremendous liberty with people in the public eye, public officials and so forth, but it's always been my understanding that there in England there was sort of a hands-off policy as regards royalty. Why is it that the British press can keep this business so hot and alive in the headlines? Have they relaxed that policy? Are they no longer in a private sanctuary?
I don't know. This thing does surprise me, as a matter of fact, because I know in the time I was in England, I did quite a lot of work for BBC over there, and their policy was pretty much like the press policy. In other words, in a comedy show, you could poke fun at the government or the minister of this or
yes.
the prime minister of that or the department of this, you know, and you could do what you please and say what you please. But never would you touch upon the subject of the royal family. That was just an unwritten law sort of thing, and nobody did. And the press were very formal. If the king might be ill, they would just have a formal thing saying that His Majesty's doctors state that he has a so-and-so and so-and-so and should be better in a couple of days and further bulletins will be announced, you know.
Yes.
And that was about, or if he opened a new factory or a new building or
but
something.
But certainly nothing of ridicule ever.
Oh, no. No, there was never anything personal.
Well, Alan, you know, of course, the British custom and laws far more than we do, and I can't sit here and editorialize, but what is the interpretation? Why is it that there is even an argument against the right of that girl, for instance, to marry that young gentleman?
Well,
is it a policy of the church? Is it a policy
no.
of the state?
No, as far as I can gather, first of all, it's a tradition that anybody with royal blood should marry somebody else with royal blood, as did Elizabeth. She married Prince Philip of Greece.
Yes.
And, well, there are few and few princes and princesses left, you know, so it becomes a little difficult to find somebody to marry, you know.
If she wants to get married, she's got to select from a wider group of friends.
You might find a prince is now working in a steel mill in Pittsburgh, you know. I mean,
yes.
There's not much, not many jobs left for princes anymore, you know.
Now, Alan, let's get back to the career, because I know it's far more important to you what happens to Alan Dean than it is what happens to Captain Townsend. What about this career of yours with the MGM record people? Are they giving you the sort of material you like to do best? What do you like to do best in the way of music?
Well, this is a thing I think that bothers practically all singers. I mean, there are things that you like to do and things that you have to do. I like singing the standard type tune, like most singers do. You know, the real good quality type songs, but they're not always the songs that dominate the hit parade. So you have to compromise. I think people in most businesses do. You know,
I mean, I think so.
Nobody does exactly what they want to do. So I try and hit it somewhere down the middle. I try and do a commercial tune and once in a while put a pretty one on the back, you know, mm-hmm. and work it out that way.
Well, now there's some excitement to your new MGM record, which you have made with the Joe Lippmann Orchestra, and we've got it on the turntable. So let's ask Lou Weir, our Erpy operator here, this handsome young gentleman over to your left, if he'll give a spin along about 45 revolutions to a thing that Alan Dean did for MGM called You Made Me Care.
You made me care when I wasn't in love, and now that I'm caring, you've gone. Sweetheart, believe me when I say it's true. Day after day, I keep longing for you. Though we're apart, you still live in my heart. The thrill of your kiss lingers on. You made me care when I wasn't in love, and now that I'm carrying you gone. It's true, day after day, I keep longing for you. Though we're apart, you still live in my heart. The thrill of your kiss lingers on. For you made me care when I wasn't in love. And now that I'm caring some new love you're sharing, and now that I'm caring, you've gone.
Fine new record by Alan Dean, British boy, once removed now to this soil of America. You Made Me Care. Alan, that's a nice record.
Do you remember that song, Howard?
Why, as I was saying before, it sounds vaguely familiar, but I can't pinpoint where I know it from.
Well, I think it came out originally around, it was about 1940. It was a waltz in those days. Da-dee-da-dum-da-da-dee.
Of course, that's it, sure. The change of tempo completely stopped me. I know it was reminiscent, at least the lyric was, but I didn't recognize the melody line set to that tempo, and that certainly is understandable. How did you happen to select this material, Al?
Well, this was one of those things where I've been making a habit of looking through the past hit parades, you know. I'll get maybe the past 10 years, and I'll look through them and try and find a tune that I think could stand reviving.
Yes.
And that's how I came across this one. I felt that using a different tempo and a different approach to it, it might do something.
Well, then does it go without saying that the MGM people allow you to select your own material all the time?
Well, it's a mutual thing. I mean, if I take something along to them that they like, we do it. And on the other hand, I don't press it. If they don't like it, I don't push the matter. I say, all right, you know. And by the same token, they don't insist on me doing something that I don't like.
Because the making of successful records is a result of great teamwork, which, of course, you've got to have between the artist and the in-air department. Alan, thank you very much for being here. It's always a delightful experience to talk to you because you present, of course, a viewpoint that's slightly different from our American performers, and it's always just wonderful renewing our friendship and our acquaintanceship. Thank you very much, Alan.
Well, thank you, Howard.
Alan Dean, the British star, who, of course, belongs to the heart of all the world, and particularly an American heart now, because that's what he possesses in a great big robust chest of his, because this is his homeland now. This is Howard Miller from Chicago saying that we've been here, as always, for Wrigley Spearmint Chewing Gum. I hope that you'll hop onto that bandwagon and pick up a couple of boxes, Mother, because it's fine to have around the house. And, Dad, if you're in your automobile a good share of the day, you reach over to the glove compartment and pick out the real fine, juicy chew. That would be, of course, wholesome, refreshing, and delicious Wrigley Spearmint Chewing Gum. Howard Miller saying goodbye for now. See you tomorrow.
You've just heard The Howard Miller Show with music on record brought to you from Chicago by Wrigley's Spearmint Gum. Be sure and join Howard Miller tomorrow at this same time when his guest will be the great Hoosier comedian Herb Schreiner. This is the CBS Radio Network.